Good evening, friends. As you know, the topic today we shall be considering is alchemy of happiness. And as the first speaker mentioned, approximately what could mean alchemy? Of course, if you go much deeper into it, as H.P. Weaver, one of the highest event in her glossary of theosophical terms, she goes deeper into that, but for our purposes, at least we can know that, and it's a common knowledge actually, that it is an old form of chemistry. Art and science of chemistry by which people were trying, some at least mystical chemists, they were trying to transmute base metal into pure. And some of them, more mystical minded, were interested in finding out what is called the philosopher's stone or the elixir of life, by means of which it is a panacea for all ailments. It is also a remedy which could give almost a long period of life, a longevity, almost an immortality for the body. This was the aim with which they started. But that apart, this was the old practice which meant to need some other science behind it. But then it also involved certain amount of lower forms of elemental forces. And that is why Madame Lavoisier gives a warning not to go indulge into such a thing. As far as we are concerned, as simple people that we are, what we need to know is the change from the state of, I couldn't call it misery, but the state of lower levels of our existence to somewhere which is of a higher kind. And that higher kind is not something extraordinary which mystics talk about, but it's just the simple measures that are required. Certain keys which theosophy offers, which we are going to deal today, very simple things are required to make a person truly happy. And therefore, it is not to be, and the other technique is to transmute or to change, as the previous speaker mentioned, from the condition of sorrow into the condition of liberty, which is a form of, an extremely subtle form of happiness. A kind of happiness which is of a very subtle nature. To be free. This is a state which brings peace. Which brings not only harmony, but which brings a collective harmony. Not only for the individual, but for all those who come in touch with such individual. Now this is something much higher about which we can just mention a little while. But presently, all we want to do is to not dabble into this low form of pleasures, as the voice of the science calls the pleasure ground of senses. But we can permit ourselves, voluntarily and consciously, to be just happy within ourselves, without depending on the outside dependability. This is one form of transmutation. There are many more. Now, the subject of happiness has been taken up by psychologists, sociologists also, anthropologists in particular, but psychologists, they thought that it is merely a matter of, happiness is merely a matter of instinct. If you satisfy your instinct, the person, individual or the creature is satisfied. But psychologists, like social psychologists like Eric Fromm, he considered that there are two kinds of happinesses, two categories of happiness, he calls it category. One is called an acquisitive form of happiness, and another is productive form of happiness, which in ancient times was considered prayas, pursuit of prayas and pursuit of shreyas. Prayas means that which is pleasing, that which is pleasant. Even in Dhammapada, the chapter from which we just read, that is entitled happiness. The very next chapter is called pleasure, priti. So So this energy means dhiti thing, something which gives some kind of titillation. It is a kind of dependable, dependent happiness. It is almost, you might say, vicarious happiness, not a legitimate, authentic form of happiness. So most of us have just laid down into this form of happiness, and it is a dependence on commodities, and therefore it is called acquisitive happiness. Now, you see, you can see in the modern life, if we just now, the tremendous stress with which people undergo. What do they do? How do they enjoy themselves? How do they spend their time? They will look at joy, which they think they give some kind of joy or pleasure. They are too much stress masters, they are running tired. Why don't they go to mall, to some window shopping, go to pub, go to clubs, go to enjoy themselves? You see, this dream can be merry, some kind of outlet. Now, this is a kind of illusion that they form. In fact, that is enervating, that is exhausting. Instead of truly relaxing, because they want to come out of the relaxation of stress, they really come out truly exhausted. These students have actually witnessed such situations in life, that people go out to enjoy, but come back actually exhausted, tired. Now, that is why we call it vicarious form of happiness. Now, that's a kind of stressful life. They want to freak out. They want to escape from their self. And the way to do it is to go for the immediate pleasurable experiences that they can desire. So that is one form of so-called happiness. And we call it so-called because this is nothing more than mere titillations of senses. It is merely at a lower level. Much little subjective level, it is a state of being. That is still higher. After it is a state. So that maybe looking at the sunset, and if you feel truly relaxed, truly composed, truly at peace with yourself and with the world momentarily, even momentarily, that is a kind of a thrill. We will come across if we permit ourselves to indulge in such a thing. The point is that we do not allow ourselves to be free. We are so caught up into the personal existence, into the claims and the compulsions of personal life, that we hardly give time. Time to listen to others. There is a pleasure in listening to others rather than talking. There is a pleasure in extending a hand of friendship. There can be a pleasure in putting a warm hand into a sick person, holding his hand for a minute. And especially for a dying man, the person is dying, if you can hold his hand, it creates a tremendous communication between the two, transmuting the low into the high. So this is how psychology is also measured. Pursuit of happiness, as we see, is universal, as the previous speaker mentioned. And our first reading by the Lama, in the very first page, when he talks about ethics for the new millennium. And his whole basis of ethics, to start with, is with this. The more I see the world, the clearer it becomes that no matter what others, no matter what our situations, we all desire to be happy and to avoid pain. We all desire to be happy and to avoid pain. Our every intended action in a sense, our whole life, can be seen as an answer, or that means the response to this great question, how am I to be happy? So the whole pursuit of our life is to seek some form of this kind of happiness. We are sustained in the great quest for happiness in, it seems to me, by hope. Now by hope it means most of the time we are deluded in that hope. We think that by doing this or that we might get some kind of happiness. People sell their car and go for a little more modern car and then again they sell that and go for still higher ones, hoping it might give them more creature comfort and give them some kind of status symbol or prestige. Actually, a very short-lived thing. And they are never satisfied to the end. So, this is an insight that I have used, that we are not seeking happiness, this kind of thing. And it is natural for human, or natural for any human, or for any creature, or any being, to seek happiness. In fact, psychologists think that every creature is endowed with an instinct for self-preservation, an instinct for sense experience, because that makes them feel that they are alive. Not only to preserve themselves, but to remain intact. That means a kind of a biological need for security, a biological need for survival. Again, a biological need to enjoy sense life. Now, this is purely on the biological level, but this is most natural, legitimate, in fact. Because, for instance, if I take my meal and enjoy my meal, it is legitimate to enjoy my meal, provided I don't get lost into it. And I don't get addicted into it. I don't get slaved to the tastes. So, there is a legitimate kind of sense pleasures, which are of a normal, natural, instinctual kind. And that is true of our extreme of every creature. So this sensational bit, that desire to live in sensation, although it is of a physical or physiological kind, it is more or less normal and accepted. And you can't call it evil in that sense. But an excess of that could be evil. So that there is a recognized form of the pleasure which is authentic. At the same time, another thing you see, that every creature tries to seek to be related to a group. He wants to be a legitimate part of a group, an acknowledged part of a group, a recognized part of a group. So the belonging to a group is another instinct in creatures and animals. They may try to hurt together. This is again a very legitimate kind of pleasure. But then there are other needs. And for that, men called Dr. Maslow, who investigated into what are known as the motivation psychology. He's trying to find out there are some higher drives. These are drives for roti, kabla and makan, some drives for security, sense of belonging, and all those things are legitimate, normal. But then there are people who are real, you know, see, they have freed themselves from this kind of compulsions or pleasures. Now these are the higher forms of needs, and they are more refined. And this is a kind of a independent of the conditions outside, independent of objects or commodities. And that is to be free to think for oneself, to act independent of the public opinion, of the bombarding of all the advertisement, media that are throwing onto our mind, complete independent judgment of life. This kind of an internal independence is a higher need for such individuals. And it gives them, I would call it happiness, a kind of sense of well-being. A sense of being comfortably. Nothing extraordinary glory about this. And yet, they take responsibility. See, they want to act independently and yet responsibly. And that is a natural impulse. It's a kind of a natural impulse. Dr. Maslow always was blessed to find that it comes to some people spontaneously. They have got a mother instinct, a protective instinct. So that they want to enjoy themselves freely and yet see to it that nobody is hurt in the bargain. Not at the expense of any individual around. They would rather be uncomfortable and give someone who said, come out of the sunlight into shade, something of that kind. So this independence, not dependence on the outside condition. Then there is what is known as the sense of self-esteem. This self-esteem is not a kind of a goal or egoistic thing, exaggerated opinion of himself. It's not an exaggerated thing, they want something great. But a natural sense of self-esteem that comes for living that kind of life. And this is value based. This is based on value. Because these people have got an instinctual arrive at intuitive steps for Vedas. They know what is proper. And they are true. This student one day came across a lady who was involved with her in a business world, a person in an executive position. And I made a slight remark that people, business people are always corrupt. And she objected. She says, if I want to indulge in even a single rupee, I would lose my self-esteem. And I am surprised to her the value that self-esteem is based on value. So that here happiness is a condition and it is also a kind of a value to her. So then she is seeking happiness within herself because her own idea about herself is something superior to the rest of them who may be indulging in whatever they want to indulge in. So I am surprised at this lady's statement that I would not enter into it out of sheer self-esteem. Because it will lower me in my own eyes, apart from being caught up and etc. etc. So this independence, let me think that these individuals are also goal-oriented. See, they don't live because of life. They are not drifting people, right? They have got a definite state, idea in their mind what they are directed towards. They don't merely dream, but they pursue that. They make it into realities. Because they have a very clear notion about the goals that they are going to achieve and the direction in which they are moving. They are also goal-oriented. And among the pursuits, you see, an ancient idea was that there are four kinds of pursuits, or four kinds of purusharthas. The first kind is called artha, or the pursuit of wealth and security. The other is called kama, the pursuit of pleasures. The third is dharma. That is kind of a pursuit for self-development. Dharma is not merely a religious pursuit. It also means duty to oneself and to the society around. You see? But it is also kind of a value. So dharma, ultimate one, is moksha, freedom. So this is a creative form of happiness where you can pursue and it is called dharma. Following your own duty to yourself, to be true to oneself, that is what I say, to be true to oneself, that is true dharma. Now this is a kind of productive orientation of Dr. Maslow, and these are the men of highest aspirations. They are not merely ambitions. If they pursue a thing, they will pursue it to the last, even at the cost of their life. But they have their value, they have got a sense of value. Say, no, what is prayers and what is prayers? What is really good, what is better, and what is best? You see, this is the thing. We are not part of good thought, good words, and good deeds. But we hardly realize that there are hierarchies of goodness. And Dr. Maslow calls it actually hierarchies of pursuits, the hierarchies of dependability. So this sense of self-esteem, goal orientation, and the higher form of aspirations. Among these people, their awareness is much higher. Not only that they are refined, but they are fully aware of themselves. They are not merely self-conscious in the lower sense, but they are aware of their action. And they are aware of other people's needs, constantly aware of their environment, extremely sensitive. They are capable of enjoying pleasure to its acme, and also capable of extreme form of, intense form of pain, but capable of controlling themselves. Now these are the subtle level of consciousness which they have learned. Now this is a kind of transmutation. From the ordinary pursuits, it's like child. A child is playing with the toy. To him the toys are his pleasures and joys. As you grow up in a youth, romantic stories and romance and youthful sports and activity and adventures, this is a stage at which these are the toys with which they are involved. We call them toys because after some time we leave them. Just as we outgrow our childhood toys, we outgrow the toys of our youth. And then middle aged people who are, of course, not their pursuit is to ambitious. They want to have wealth, position, power, status, recognition, and so on. belonging to a group and at the higher position in that group. This is a kind of hierarchy to which they go. So, this awareness, this is another quality in them, and therefore they go in for creative pursuits. The creative pursuits is not merely art or artistic. Even if they take up scientific pursuit or intellectual pursuit, they really do not limit themselves to that. Their concern is to, oh, this is going to make me a better man. How, oh, by being a better man, I have contributed to world happiness. So that they want to become a kind of an important part of the part of humanity. Secretly, they realize that they have to play a role in this world. In this world. And if they go, when they leave the world, you see, they leave behind a kind of a vacuum. They are the people who really make us feel that they are worthy people, and we really miss them. Because they may be jolly good people. Jolly good people are very humorous, very charming people. They are capable of humor, charm, wittiness. And yet, very humble. Now, this is a kind of transformation. So it is a matter of transforming one's character, transforming one's nature. And again, as you said, it all based on value. So we have various recipes that are given to us, you see, for happiness. And we are not sure, I think, we have to rush to them. Remember that very little is needed to make a happy life. Very little is needed to make a happy life. See, and see, for this, even the very second little. Fortunately, although we are subject to despair arising out of natural and man-made catastrophes, we also can experience joy, love, achievement, mutual understanding, creativity, compassion, generosity, intellectual and artistic activity, and friendship. It's a very simple thing. You don't have to pay for it. You don't have to spend on it. It's just a matter of orientation. It's a kind of a creative orientation, as we said. And there are natural, spontaneous things to which belong to human beings. Animals can't have this kind of pursuit, however brilliant that animal can be. See, it's mutual understanding, creativity, compassion, generosity. And it should be said actually that charity, justice, and generosity should come to us naturally and spontaneously as a human being. And if it were not to happen, that means we are far behind in our evolutionary progress. If charity, justice, and generosity cannot come to us naturally and spontaneously, it doesn't become a part and parcel of our native nature, then we are really behind evolutionary marks in the ladder of evolution. It's a very sad thing if it happens. So very little, you don't have to pay too much for it. Just the human relationship achievements and mutual understanding, creativity, compassion, generosity. Very little is required to make others happy. And joy is not a thing, it is in us. So that things, we are continually wanting to take possessions. So this possessive kind of happiness, on the one side, it is not that, it is how you use those possessions. That is more important than possession itself. You see, this is the use with which we make use of our health, we make use of our five senses, we make use of the status and the position in which we are not today. How we utilize it, that is more important than possessions themselves. And he who uses them wisely need not go for too many things. You see, Socrates was once found going to a mela and spending a lot of time at this shop. This was called window shopping. And his accidentally, his pupil came across and he said, "Sir, you are here? In this place?" He thought that he was a recluse, he was a hermit, and he would not be interested in such things. He said, "No, I am trying to search how many things I don't need." He said, "How is this?" He said, "Sir, try this, it's not necessary. This is, you must be putting things." So like that, they're completely non-attached. His needs were so little, so basic, that he did not complicate his life with this. There are many, many important things in life to be done. So one complicate life with these little petty things. You know, people keep on changing that. You know that iPhone. It is now the most modern category. You see it. Is it dating? Alright, let's go further. But then the last one, this is very important. Blessed is he who has found his work. Let him ask no further blessedness. And whenever I read this, I think of Mr. Judge. At the right age of 23-24, he met Madame Blavatsky. And the moment he met her, he has found his work. He was made to see the purpose for which he was here. He was made to see that he has left young with HPV a long line of experience for working for humanity. And then he thought that he was always starting to search, not for knowledge as he said, but he was searching for a plan which was hidden somewhere. And then HPV showed that plan before him and then left it to him, to his own resources. And he was this one. That he felt secure in the presence. He found a connecting link between himself and HPV as his guru, as his teacher. And the teacher who opened his eyes into the plant which he was searching for. So the fellow has found his work. The found his work is not dependence on simply outside. You see, that means he has found the goal towards which he should move. He has found the purpose. He also found the direction in which he should move. He has found a meaning to his life. To find one's work is to find meaning for why I am here. Whatever it is, it may be a work of a lady, a work of a mother, a work of a sister, it may be the work of a little of his body. Whatever it is, but in that position, if you just fit into that position and be happy about it, it will be more than enough. And there is a very humorous story, I think we have told it very often. And there was a small fisherman who after early morning would get up and catch some few fishes, put into a basket, and then relax himself and look at the sky and whistle and swim. Then a lazy man comes and said, "Hey, old man, what are you wasting your time? Come on, get up, go and catch more fish." He said, "What for?" "Hey, you catch more fish, you can have money." "What for?" "Oh, then you can buy a trawler out of this. Then you can buy many, many fish." "What for?" "Then you can become a rich man." "But what for?" "Oh, so that you can enjoy yourself." "Sir, what am I doing here?" "I am enjoying myself." "Listening, singing, this is Mount Holman and so on." So this is how it is. Some people have apparently a low form of choices made, but that is enough for that particular life. And same happened to Sujata. When Sujata, you know the story of Lord Buddha, then he was undergoing a severe form of ascetic practice. And he was almost becoming unconscious because of starvation. Then Lady Sujata thought him, he was sitting near the Odhitri, thought him to be a god. So she offered him a very pure milk papaya made from milk by herself. And brought back his energy. Because he had done with so much love and so much affection. And he immediately saw that this woman, simple, pure woman. And he asked her, "Are you happy?" He said, "What more do I want? I came here to thank you," she was a devata, "because I was seeking for a boy child, and with God's grace I got it. So I came here to thank the devata who has offered me this little child. And I'm happy with the happiness of my company, happiness of my family life." And Lord Buddha says, I mean, he feels that I did not distract them with this high sounding philosophy. "Yes, sir. May you be happy as long as you can, because someday you will come to know higher values of life." After that, he will say it in so many words. But this is how it is done. Still higher values, no doubt, much more than a mere domestic life. But she was happy and content with this, and that's what more do you want from that? And that is exactly what happened in New York. Opinion poll was conducted. Some two renters, two people were standing at the mall, at the purchasing place, and people asked, "Are you happy?" And some people said, some people no. And the number of people who said yes, and who they are, and why are they happy? And they found that majority of the women have said yes. And among this majority, Majority of them were married women with a child or two. So that secret of happiness was just the context of married life and a baby in them. Simple joys that give them happiness. Although it can give them lot of pain and backache and lot of, and you know how women are hardworking. But they are happy. Majority of them, this is a statistical data I have read in Reader's Digest. So this is how it is. People are happy to have small pleasures of life. Now this is how it is because we men, we human beings are dual in our nature. That man has got a heaven aspiring mind. At the same time our eyes are riveted constantly to our earth. So there is two kind of consciousness. The kind of consciousness which is earth earthly, which is, as I said, that eyes are riveted to this earth. If only we could turn heavenwards, and we said, one heavenward, turn inwards, we could certainly find some kind of happiness within. So we have a heaven aspiring mind, and it is that we have to transmit towards. So there is a possibility of transmutation. See, this ordinary form of fondness, let's say we are fond of this, or fond of dog, or fond of land, or fond of a beloved, and so on. One has to transmit this, but except for the love of the family, we have to little expand our concern for the human family. That is a graduation from which this ordinary form of attachments to and fondness for the petty things of life. Now you outgrow this and you are concerned for the love of others. And that care, concern, sensitivity comes spontaneously for such people. Because they are concerned and they are aware of their environment. They are concerned of others. They are constantly worried about other people's needs, more than their own needs. They are the last to run away. If the place is on fire, they will be the last people to run away. They will see that others are find a way to escape. And see that others are, they try to help others to give up. This is what has happened in one theater. There are two or three people who remain, who are the last people to come out of the theater, and they were concerned with other people going out. There were three young men and one woman. See, in the midst of fire in a theater, this is the kind of concern for us. This is a transmutation of caring for oneself and caring for others. These ambitions, worldly achievements, intellectual pursuits, other creative pursuits, are useful scientific. That's why in Life on the Planet is trying to say that a scientist who is concerned and who is deeply involved with concentration on his study is something better than so-called mystic, who may be only wanting to become beautiful in his own eyes. He wants to grow. He is what is called a self-development. So better than that is even a scientist or an intellectual who is a simple choice of poetic expression or artistic work or absorbing himself in cultural activities. But the highest is of course to live to benefit mankind. Because to live for others or to live for self is to embrace disappointment. There is one message that says to live for self is to live for disappointments. To live for self is to work for disappointments. I mean, in other words, to live to benefit mankind. If that is the starting point, if you can start it, please may God help me to make me a better person than yesterday. So then I can become a better able to help others. Now if this is a kind of inward pleasure we can take with ourselves, that I can so transmute myself so that I may become more helpful to others. That is a kind of transmutation. So these obstacles to this are our anxieties, and Dhammapada speaks about this. But what Buddha also says in that chapter on happiness, that all these things, but let us be free from this. And how to do it? That's the question. How? At least be aware that we are so dependent on things around us. And that to be free from these negative feelings. If you are aware that this is a kind of negative feeling, I am going to... It is a contagious feeling in a sense. Because if I am sad, I am making others sad. If I am cheerful, I am making others cheerful. So because a very simple thing, a little smile or putting a hand on somebody's shoulder, say hello with a real warmth in your heart. You see, this is a kind of simple thing which I require. So the obstacles are of the negative kind. And this is all because of lack of knowledge about man. You see, this is where every theosophical meeting will find. That we will always emphasize the nature of man and the purpose for which he is here. That is the very base of man's nature, that is charity, that is love, that is the luminosity. And that is what he said here in our reading. If peace you are seeking, this is in the second phase. If peace you are seeking, therefore it is best, the good in everything is found. Then that is actually a kind of an outlook. If you are searching for something good everywhere, instead of the negativity, you know, this optimistic and pessimistic. The optimistic can see something rosy everywhere. If he is, instead of seeing, I mean, he can always see a silver lining around even a dark cloud. You tell him about dark clouds and he will say that, oh, I can see silver lining. Somewhere he finds a way out. So that when we see a lot of bad news going on around, oh, this, our potholes on the road, crowd on the streets, people are grumbling, complaining. Let us not be the part of that complaining crowd. You notice it? Forget about it. Because this is naturally happening because of we have our hanging in the first place. Mr. John always says, don't complain about other people. We have our hand into it because it is we who have made other people miserable. Other people little low. It is my lower qualities has contagiously affected others. So then the other thing is that if you can plant a flower into somebody's garden, a poisonous weed is removed from my own. And the flower says that. Yeah. If you can just do a little thing like planting a rose in my neighbor's garden, a loathsome weed is taken out of my own. This is what little thing that we are expected to do. And because we are a luminous in our nature. So, that's why the Lord Jesus says, take courage and be patient. The light is shining in your heart. The light is shining in your heart. And if you can go on, that is with courage and patience, if you can go on, you will find it there. And when you find it, it will be brighter than you can imagine. So the day will come and we can find it there. But till such time, you have to take courage and be patient. And be aware that there is such a thing as luminous nature of man. So the man in his basic nature is actually luminous. Because both man and cosmos is made of such a ananda. The very beginning of the beginning of this cosmos. And therefore, man, a part of the whole totality of the universe, in the very beginning, at the very base of it, there is such chit and ananda. That truth, goodness and beauty is very there, very in the very foundation of this cosmos. So it has to be there in us. Now this is a kind of faith we have to learn. This is a kind of emphasis which we have to do. That man, in his true nature, is an important spark from the divinity. And that first is come out of that spot. He is not separated or segregated from. Because if you look around, you find that there are multiplicity of sparks around with us. And that they are also part of our brotherhood. That out of that same fatherhood of God, we are the children of the unity. And therefore we are brothers to each other. And that's all the concern for brothers of others. And affirmation. That each individual that we meet, that each newborn child that is born, is a spark of divinity. Is a child of life, as the children said. Children of life, as you go forth into the world. So this going forth into the world, the child is told that children of life, that you are children of life. That your basic nature is of luminous nature. Immortal and luminous. And therefore, ultimately, I think we shall end it here by the quotation from the Tisha in Ustavadiga. Usta means ordinarily translated as happiness. But Usta in that Gatha is described as luminosity. Because it's there within every soul, that luminosity, that light. He says happiness or luminosity flows to him who gives it, gives happiness to others. So giving of happiness is not merely talks about the law of karma. That you give happiness is kind of again. I give you happiness so that you can give me back the happiness. This is the kind of again you see in magic people comes across. Oh, I'll make you happy so that you can make me happy. I will take you out in this chapter so that you can do this for me. This is karma. But giving happiness because it is my very nature to give happiness. Because it is, I'm made that way. If this is a kind of attitude towards life, then I must see clearly that my surrounding is not made with my long face, with my angry face. It is like, hello, good morning, good morning. I will say, you are totally heartless, totally unconcerned. If I enter the hall and meet somebody and somebody says, good morning, not good morning. This kind of attitude towards fellow human in a very simple way. You see, once you were asked by the person who is with, because he was always thanking his lipman. He says, and once he puts his hand on the lipman and thanks him. So the official guy says, no, what are you worried about? He's paid very handsomely here. Why do you have to thank him? Every time you go out and every time you go down, thank him. He says, do you know that this fellow can die instantaneously for me? He is willing to die for me because he is not only a rich man, he is also a secret security man. He is a man who is concerned for me. That whatever little contribution he makes, he is quite happy. He is happy to serve me. And I know the story about Tata. J.R.J. Tata. He has been, special room has been assigned to him in Taj Hotel. Very simple, large rooms, along with very simple photographs and this requirements. But every person who come and serve him, who thank him warmly. And wherever he went personally, he functionally, I am told that he went into the kitchen to thank the chef. And this kind of sincere feeling of gratitude towards people who have been working under you, and you are the owner of this place. Building. And yet, there is a warm sense of personal relationship with others. Now, such people are immortal. Such people can make, cut a heart into the heart, or cut a place into the heart of others, one being their guts. Now, this is a kind of happiness which you can spend without spending a penny for it. And you will have to end it with Lord Krishna's last chapter. In the Bhagavad Gita, I mean, this is a thrilling. This student is always thrilled when he reads. O mighty King, the last chapter. O mighty King, this wonderful sacred dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, I am delighted again and again. Also, as I recall to my memory the wonderful form of Hari, the Lord, my astonishment is great. O King, and I rejoice again and again. And then he says, wherever Krishna, the Supreme Master of Devotion, Yogeshwar, and wherever the son of Pritha, Arjuna, the mighty archer, may be, there will certainly fortune, victory, wealth and wise action. This is my belief. And that is where there is a conjunction between such good noble people meeting together. That means in search of some good people. And he has lucky enough to have witnessed this. He says, I rejoice again and again. It was given freely to me. And that was in Dhammapada, it was said, the company of the wise one gives happiness. This is why another thing. We are lucky if we can escape the sight of fools. That is derogative. But it is great fortune to meet one single friend in your life. who can be loyal to you, who can understand you, who has a thought, a little bit of sympathy for you, and he will not hesitate to correct you, shake you from your shoulders and say, you are wrong, has the courage to say so on your face. That kind of friend, dependable. A fortunate man to get such a thing is a blessing, this gives happiness. You can take your questions.
In your lecture, you have spoken about four kinds of pursuits. Artha, Kama, Dharma. What are the four of
moksha. Moksha, liberation. This is ultimate, and so we did not like you, because this is an ultimate state of consciousness, the highest reward of living the proper life. But for us, this immediate thing is dharma. This means pursuit of improving oneself day after day, hour after hour, year after year. It's not merely development, but unfolding. It's not merely a personal pursuits. It's a kind of unfoldment in which you embrace others, because by which you are contributing to the progress of others. Because each time a person, a student rises, he lifts up others along with him. And each time he falls, he drags along with him. So this is a law of nature, that if I rise superior to my individual feelings, I am lifting others along with me. And that is the best pursuit that we can pursue. So we have avoided the subject of moksha, because it is too intricate to go into, which is the fourth pursuit, which at a much higher level. Only a Shrutapati could pursue that, the one who has entered into the stream. But for simple folks like us, it is enough to be good and value the virtue of goodness. Because then there is such a thing as better and the best.
Sir, I have two questions. One is, you gave the example of fisherman, the one who is contented by himself, catching few fish, you know, and a businessman who comes in and teaches and preaches in the business rules to grow and, you know, become more happy, and then he says, I'm enjoying myself, I'm happy as of now. Is there any qualitative change in the kind of happiness we see or we observe when we are in the moment without going in the pursuit of higher happiness achieved, and the one which is experienced after coming to full circle? Question number one.
Yes, please. First, whether some question. Will you just repeat a little bit the last question?
The one is, see, the fisherman is content.
I understand. Yes.
And the businessman is rather knowing other methods and means and techniques to become more happy, and rather later on he may realize the futility of it all after coming a whole circle. Will there be any difference in the quality of the happiness both of them experience?
The quality of the happiness of the fisherman is of a very simple kind, very innocent man that he was, that he is. And truly, no less than Einstein has told me, said, I'm giving another example that will suit you, that he said, every time I talk to intellectuals, I feel that happiness is not possible. Humanity is can't be possible, because he talks of stars and extraordinary things. And by the way, speaking about the stars, some astronomer said that, look at such a tremendous universe, and man is just a dot. But then he said, but the man is the observer. He is the observer of this cosmos. He is not only a dot. See, the two we are looking at it, the astronomer says that, oh, there is a vastness and you are merely a dot. But he thought that the dot is an astronomer. He is not an insignificant man. So this little fellow looks very insignificant in his own little way, like the Sujata, in their own simple way, they are happy within themselves. And we must not disturb their happiness, please. Because if you do, we can put them into a very affluent condition, as they do sometimes this from hotmans. If you put them into hotmans, can they celebrate the thing? They take money, buy things, do any other things. So it is better that they remain where they are sometimes. Sometimes it's good that they remain where they are, or lift them up a little bit as far as hygienic condition is concerned. Now this man, as you said, a wealthy man, sometimes at the end of the day, or at the end of his life, he can be really happy. Because people used to salute and respect him and no longer salute him the moment he retires. This is what has happened to the best of the executives. The moment they go out of, it's like a comet going away and forgotten. They are really forgotten. The one who is remembered is like Ziyadin Tata, who still people remember him. A small chef told me this story. This little chef said, sir, he used to come and thank me. And he was warm about it. So like that. So these people who can live behind in the hearts of other people, some kind of lives, yes, spread their cheerfulness around him, and that is a matter of really. How about your second question?
The second question is, might be ignite some controversy, but the question is about a survey you were talking about, in which most of the women were content. Okay.
Not content, happy actually.
Yeah, happy also. I'm sorry. Yeah, they were happy also. I mean, is it a reason why certain religions have said that women cannot get liberation or moksha like Jainism?
I'm sorry, I won't be able to answer that question. I'm ignorant about this. Anybody could say that women can't alone, without the help of the husband. This is what Shaktanis just said. That you can achieve your moksha, you can achieve your liberation through service of your husband. And this is a kind of thing perhaps said by the priest. Well, please. Thank you.